There is a connection between tech and design.
Yeah, the thought process, the problem solving, the creativity that must go into them, and being able to see things from a user's perspective and all that.
The Are We Taught podcast, we get you.
So, come with me, your host Ziki, and let's explore Africa's journey in tech and design as we showcase and celebrate African women innovators, creators, entrepreneurs, and designers who are on their way to creating successful businesses and ventures.
On this episode,
I am yet to see the women in tech bodies going deep to high school and primary school. So if already you're just six of you, by the time you're graduating, look at the tech companies in Kenya. They all want a share of these six.
Tiara syndrome.
You wait for somebody to crown you.
I see.
And now, here's your host.
Hello! And welcome to the Afri Women in Tech and Design podcast. I am your host, Ziki, and in studio we have with us Margaret Ondeng.
Yay!
Hey! How are you doing, Margaret?
I am well. You?
I'm very good, thank you. So, let us begin by you telling us who you are.
I'm a software engineer by profession. And I work as a mobile money integration specialist.
Okay.
So now that I'm in the payment industry, I want to see which problems I can solve in the payment industry using machine learning.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just for those who may not be too familiar, when you're saying machine learning, just give like a real life example maybe that they can go, okay, is that what that is?
For instance, you've had like two cases of fraud. How will you prevent the third case from happening? You will study these two cases and find out the pattern, and then now use that pattern to prevent a future case of fraud.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's really interesting to know. So, how did you get into it? You know, you become a software engineer. Where did it all begin?
Initially, I knew I was going to be a doctor. When in high school, you're always pressured to be an engineer or a doctor. Especially when you're top performer, they always tend to choose for you these specific careers.
I see. So what you're saying is that you're very, very good in school.
Yeah. Because I said the sense of humility.
I don't see the humility, but okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So I knew I was going to become a doctor. Even at the back of my chair, there was a tag written consultant surgeon.
Wow.
Yes. But deep inside, I knew that is what the society wanted me to be.
Okay.
But I did want to be a doctor. So a society can influence you to want to be something.
For sure.
So after high school and the results were out, somehow I didn't qualify to pursue medicine. And then in the process, I realized I had an interest in computing.
Okay, how did you realize the interest?
When you're going through these computer packages classes, you sort of underrate them, but they play a certain role. So in that process, I realized I was very smart, and the teacher even at some point stopped teaching me because I had the interest. I could learn.
You picked it up quickly.
I picked it up quickly. And at that point, I didn't know much about software engineering, computer science, or computer engineering, but I just knew I had a passion to pursue something related to computing.
Yes.
When the time came to revise these public universities choices, I just went and put everything. Computer engineering, computer science, software engineering.
Anything related.
So I was selected to do software engineering in Kenyatta University. That's now when the journey started.
It began. Okay.
Yeah.
So here you are, KU. How long did it take you? And
so for KU, you are this girl from the village. The much you've interacted with a computer is just the basic basic computer knowledge, mm-hmm. not anything further than that. Then you come to KU and you meet people from Starehe, people from Mangu, who have interacted with computers. They have even actually done something deeper. So the first time, it's always a shocker. And I remember in my first semester, I performed poorly. Mm-hmm. One, because I was clueless.
Adjusting.
So second semester, still the same thing. Mm-hmm. So now what happened is, after my second semester, I went for an exchange program in Rwanda. Mm. So there's this organization called ISEC. I may have heard
of it. Yes, I've heard of ISEC.
So ISEC is a very good organization when you're in campus. Okay. It exposes you to so many opportunities. I joined ISEC, then went to Rwanda. And when I was in Rwanda, when you're telling people that you're doing software engineering, I could see the way they will treat me with respect. Mm. And I thought to myself, what if I actually put more effort and knew what I was doing and what it entails, mm-hmm. maybe I'll get more respect than that.
Okay.
So after that, I came back to Kenya, and then now I started doing more research around computing. Because computing is broad, so you need to find your niche.
Yeah.
So I tried networking and stuff.
Didn't fit. You didn't want to have computers talk to each other.
I even did those certifications, mm-hmm. and I remember it was a struggle.
Yeah, it was just boring.
It was just boring and too much theory.
Yeah.
So that didn't work out for me. Then I paid to be taught how to write code. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're in KU, then there's Kenyatta Market. So you just go into the market. One of the students has established a cyber cafe where he's also teaching programming language. Mm-hmm. So I went and then wrote there. But then I realized this person is going to the internet, mm-hmm. extracting information, then giving me to copy and paste.
Yeah.
So I was like, no. If he can do this, meaning there's no miracle, he is doing.
Yeah.
So I dropped out of that small college, mm-hmm. and now started going deep into the internet,
yeah.
and just teaching myself.
Yes.
How to write code. Because you realize, as much as you're taught programming in our universities, it's usually very
basic.
Very basic. Mm-hmm. Basic, mm-hmm. to the end that you cannot do much with that knowledge. Most of the part, like 98% of what I know, I taught myself.
Amazing.
The school was just there to introduce.
Yeah. So yes, finally you found your way.
Yeah.
And this is your second semester of your first year.
Yeah.
And now you continued. I'm sure now the story was very different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So once you know and you're passionate about something, mm-hmm. it becomes interesting, and now you start putting more hours, mm-hmm. into it.
Mm-hmm. And in the end, graduated after 4 years. Was it a 4-year course?
Yeah, it was a 4-year course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with that effort, I actually got a job before I did my final exam.
Amazing.
Yeah,
you don't even have the paper and you landed a job.
Yeah.
How did you do that?
They came for recruitment drive in, mm-hmm. KU. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we were like 100 of us. Mm-hmm.
And how did they select you out of 100?
They started with an online interview.
Okay.
Then one-on-one interview. Mm-hmm. So they reduced us to around 7.
Wow.
So I was
from 100 to 7?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's so cool because you started off struggling a bit, not being too clear on how to do things, and then you wind up getting a job even before you graduate.
Yeah.
And so after your bachelor's degree, you got into this job. Who was the job with?
Yeah, so I worked with Mahindra Conviva. Mm-hmm. We are taught by Airtel,
mm-hmm.
to do their mobile and money integrations. Mm-hmm. So I joined them as an integration engineer.
There's a time that you did a 24-hour something. Would you care to share that with us?
So I used to do a lot of hackathons when I was in campus. Mm-hmm. So when you're in campus, you're broke. And you always look for ways to get money.
Okay.
And one of those ways is attending a competition and winning.
And winning.
Yeah. So I attended a lot of those hackathons organized by Red Cross and many others. So hackathon, for instance, what you call, let's say, like one used to be organized by Red Cross, Random Hacks of Kindness.
Mm,
like
you want to,
so you want to come up with a solution that is going to help people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you have 24 hours to think of something, even if it's going to be something that is going to tackle corruption or something in Senegal, you have 24 hours to come up with that idea. So in that context, now you have 24 hours to think of an idea around that topic you've been given and implement it.
Yeah. I get it. So it's like very real life.
Yeah, real life.
Situations so that you're trying to see how you can use your skills to make something better.
And the good thing about hackathons, you have 24 hours to come up with an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so you put together in a team and then you put together all your skills and actually deliver a prototype within 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So when you leave, you've learned something new. You've learned what other people are doing.
Yes.
And so when you go back to school, you now start reading so that you can become a competent person.
Mm-hmm.
But the next time you're in a hackathon,
you're
the lead.
Yeah. Amazing. In terms of just the work environment, did you notice anything that you know?
Yeah, when I joined Mahindra, I went for our induction in India. And if I look at, because there we were mixed Africans and Indians. So
mm-hmm.
we were like 25 Africans and 25 Indians.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was only one lady from India.
Wow.
And the rest for the ladies from Africa were around five.
Five.
Yeah. So you can imagine out of 50, you're only six or seven of you.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's when you realize this problem you're having of very few. It's a global problem.
It's a global problem.
Yeah.
It's not just something you're experiencing here at home, even when you left. It's just so it seems in general.
Yeah.
The industry.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. So with that, guys, we will be back where she will tell us even more about her already very interesting journey. We'll catch you after the break. Hello and welcome back. This is the Afro Women in Tech and Design podcast, and in studio we have with us Margaret Ondeng, a software engineer, and so much more. Before we left, she was telling us so many things, but we'd like to pick up from, you know, your career path and how things have been moving, you know. But how's that played a role for you in your career progression?
Yeah, so for me, I've learned a lot by looking at what people around me are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can just mention like two of my friends,
yes,
I can mention Marcy Rangi, who works at Andela as mm-hmm. Developer Relations Manager. I can mention Dorcas Owino, who runs Lake Hub in Kisumu.
Mm-hmm.
So I am where I am because I looked at what these people are doing and learned from them. And they were also willing to support me in my learning process.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm at a point where I want to do that to people around me and also the young people who are coming after me.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And I know that this whole aspect of mentorship, is it something that just started when you were, you know, employed and, you know, suddenly in the working field? Or
if I look back, I started mentorship way back. Maybe back then I didn't know I was mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
And then after high school, I will still mentor now high school students.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I'll be even called to schools to talk to students about sciences and
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then now when I came to campus, there's this global program called Technovation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a program for young women, high school and below. So they are tasked to come up with an idea and then work on it in a period of a few months.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined Technovation as a mentor. So it's in that moment that I discovered I was really passionate about teaching others about what I am doing.
Mm-hmm.
And also to encourage young girls in high schools, in primary schools, to take up this career.
And I'm really glad that you mentioned that because, you know, we've been hinting at this whole disparity within the computing industry, you know.
Yeah.
And here you are going into different schools and mentoring these younger women, girls, and just, you know, opening their eyes to the options and possibilities. And do you see that as a way of sort of addressing this issue of the disparity, or what is your feeling on that?
Actually, that's where the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see, if I look at my class in campus, we're only like six ladies in a class of 50.
Yeah.
So if already you're just six of you, by the time you're graduating,
mm-hmm.
look at the tech companies in Kenya. They all want a share of these six.
Yes.
And it's not enough.
Imagine.
So the problem is not here at the top. It's
yeah.
at the very beginning. like, how comes we have only six ladies
who have enrolled
in an undergraduate mm-hmm. class?
And just from your interactions with the, you know, high school students and others that you've had the chance to mentor, have you seen any change? Is there maybe a person who you know has...
Yeah, actually, one of the ladies, I just remember her name, mm-hmm. she reached out to me in Facebook mm-hmm. and she was like, in 2014, you were in Maseno University and mm-hmm. our teacher brought us to Maseno and you talked to us. I am happy to say I am now pursuing my undergraduate.
Amazing. And all you did was talk.
Yeah.
And she was inspired.
Remember, you see, the moment you're sharing your story with these
yeah.
young girls,
yeah.
they start seeing that they can do it.
Mm-hmm. And just continuing on with your whole mentoring career, your yeah. mentoring side gig. In addition to high school students,
yeah.
You also mentioned that you mentor women who are actually in the field with you.
Yeah.
In jobs.
In jobs
in
and in universities.
In
like
universities.
I work closely with Nairobi University.
Yes.
With their computer science
mm-hmm.
department. I'm
mm-hmm.
the mentor for the female students
mm-hmm.
in undergraduate computer science.
And in jobs, for instance, I'm really interested in the workplace dynamic, you know, when you're mentioning the disparities. What types of sort of issues do you find coming up with the people who you are?
Most of the complaints I get from my mentees,
mm-hmm.
especially in their first year of job,
mm-hmm.
the fact that, first of all, they are very few,
mm.
it affects them.
Okay.
And then the fact that most of them want to sit back, they start seeing as if the men are overtaking them and taking all the glory
mm-hmm.
from them. So they usually come to me and ask me, he's taking all the credit, what do I do? Such
yeah.
like cases.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. And in some instances, have you sort of come across this feeling of maybe some sort of tokenism in the hiring process, maybe if you're talking about, you know, a job has been advertised, they're saying we want a woman specifically to apply. And do you feel as though sometimes it's just to add on to the quota so that they can look good on the books, or is it that truly that they are...
Yeah, okay. For me, all the jobs that I've gotten have always been a fair advertisement.
Mm-hmm.
We want engineers, apply.
Yes, yes.
I've never been in a case where we want female engineers and
mm-hmm.
apply.
Mm-hmm.
I've always gone for we want engineers, apply.
Apply. Amazing.
Yeah.
And so from your mentees, do they get that sort of... feeling as well in the workplace? Is that how they are taken as, yes, you're an engineer, come sit down, let's do this task? Or what do they experience?
Some will experience that.
Mm-hmm.
Some will come and tell you, I've noticed that I'm being given softer tasks.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm being given lighter duties.
Mm-hmm.
When I say something, they don't believe what I am saying. I have to go ahead and justify.
Mm-hmm.
Or I will say the same thing as the guy, or the guy will be taken seriously. These things are out there and they're happening.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you say that's the majority of the situation, or is it 50-50?
Unfortunately,
mm.
yes.
Mm.
As a woman, to be very honest, you have to work twice as hard as the guy.
Mm-hmm.
You have to prove that actually I am good at what you hired me for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yes, you know, your job, your first job that you got even before your graduation. How long did you sort of stay at this job? What happened?
Yeah, so I worked with them for 2 years
mm-hmm.
yeah, before I decided it was time to move to a more challenging role.
Okay, yeah. Always looking for a challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's good. Can you share with us like one of the highlights of your 2 year stint with them?
Yeah, so when I was in Mahindra, I was sent on assignment in Malawi. And being the fact that I was just there for a year,
yeah.
and being sent outside, somebody trusting you to go and help people in another country, really meant a lot. It meant that my boss had actually seen something in me. So you go to a foreign country, people have expectations.
Mm.
Like when somebody hears, we are bringing an expert from outside. So whether you know or you don't know, no one
cares. Yeah.
So it's up to you to catch up really fast
yeah.
and deliver what the whole country
yeah.
expects. Yeah. So when I was there, I was in charge of those projects that were still running there,
mm-hmm.
as well as operations, like supporting the business, yeah. And I stayed there for 3 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So during the 3 months, were you sort of managing a team, or were you...
You're part of a team, but now you are the expert in the team.
So any issue that happens, you're
yeah.
the one they are running to say,
so
how is this happening?
Yeah,
okay.
So if today at a money goes down, you're
yeah.
the first person to know why it's not actually working.
Imagine. Yeah. Everyone looks to you.
Everyone looks to you.
And then to give them some idea of how to begin to solve the issue.
Yeah.
Wow, how did you handle that?
Because it's something I was interested in, and as well as the fact that I'm a quick learner, so it really helped me catch up very fast.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so in terms of even just being posted there in the first place, were you just handpicked by your boss here in Nairobi and told, listen, you're the one we've been watching, we want you to go, or was there a sort of different process that was followed?
I was actually told, can you be in Malawi in the next 2 days?
Wow.
I did not have time to ask why.
Yeah, exactly.
I just said yes. I stayed with them for 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's there that I discovered I had a special understanding of mobile network operators like Safaricom, Airtel, and MTN.
A special understanding meaning?
For you to work with them, you really need to know their processes and their procedures as well as their politics. Yeah. So after 2 years, when a role came up, in direct pay online that primarily focused on managing the relations between direct pay online and mobile network operators, I felt that it was a fit.
Yeah.
So I joined direct pay online after 2 years.
Okay, so then where are you now?
Yeah, so right now I am not writing code.
Oh my, okay.
But I'm enjoying what I am doing.
Okay.
Because I work closely with developers. So I listen to what the business wants. And then I look at the requirements that these mobile network operators have given us. Then I interpret that to the developers and the infrastructure engineers. And make sure that whatever they have done is what is expected by both the customer and the business.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm just really amazed because now that you're sort of in my mind what I'm saying is that you're sort of a translator. for the technical part of the people. You translate it from the business language into a technical language that can now be implemented into a system that works. So, but how did you get the skill to sort of do that? Because, you know, so far we know that you have been amazing at coding. How did you get to...
So as much as I was very good in coding, outside work, I would involve myself in a lot of developer community work. So I was part of Google Developer Group, which means you're working with developers who are interested in Google technologies. And sometimes you'll be tasked to organize events for close to 1,000 people.
Wow.
So during that time, I got to have an experience working with people. So I got to interact with a lot of people, Googlers, and even people who you want to partner with. So that helped me develop another set of skills outside...
People skills.
Yeah. Outside just writing code. So I had the people skills.
Yeah.
So when it comes now to... Now the job side, the fact that I can easily communicate to people with different, how do I put it? Like I can communicate to an engineer and he or she will understand. I can communicate to a business person, he or she will understand. So I decided to pick up a role that is merging the two. That's how I got the role at Direct PM.
Okay, and why did you feel it was time to merge the two? Why didn't you just, you know, stay with your coding because that's what you're really good at?
Sometimes it's just taking a leap of faith. You see a role and you look at what you've already achieved. And you'll feel it's a fit.
Yeah. Amazing. You know, are there groups that are coming together as women in the industry, in the country, and that maybe you're a part of? The different groups of women in technology, so that people can realize that, yes, we are few, but yet we are many when you put us all together.
Yeah, there are actually so many groups here. We have Akira Chicks, we have Women in Tech Africa, we have Google Women Tech Makers, Anita Borg also has a chapter here.
That you feel like it's a sort of cohesive group. Do you have
that? If you look at the rate at which tickets get sold out at these conferences here in Kenya, I think it sort of gives us that hope that we are headed in the right direction.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good to know. And you know, just you had mentioned earlier that whole aspect of mentorship.
Yeah.
You talked about your individual effort. You know, you've joined these places and you have this passion. But are you seeing the groups that you've mentioned adopting the same strategy?
To be very honest, we are not there yet. Mm-hmm. Apart from maybe Akira Chicks and a part of Safaricom Women in Tech, I am yet to see the women in tech bodies going deep to high school and primary school. I'm yet to see that. Yeah. And that's where the problem is. The focus is so much on the universities where we have six. As opposed to primary and high schools where we could get more.
Yeah. That's interesting that, you know, that they're sort of, like you're saying, focusing on those who could already be a success story. When they could now, if it's to increase the number of people who are in the industry. And I think that makes a lot of sense what you're saying. You know, how do we rope in the men in the industry to sort of give support to the women there? And not so much give support by making things easier for them, as you said, but just, you know, changing their mindset and saying that this is my colleague and she's here based on merit. And how do you see that sort of happening?
If I look at the teams I've worked with for the past 5 years, all of them have been men. And I would say men play a key role in making these women who are already in tech stick. So for me, I've had very supportive colleagues and even friends even push me to be a better person.
I see.
Like, they won't see as if you're doing so much. They'll see as if you need to do
more.
So men play a critical role.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you go to some places and the men might make you feel as if they're the ones who run the show. The most interesting part is after you actually prove that you know your stuff. From that on, they'll respect you going on.
Wow, and in your experience, how long did it take for you to prove your that you know your stuff, for instance? How long would you say a person has to...
I can't really quantify.
But
mostly it depends on the first task maybe you're given in an organization, which is actually very important. The first task I am usually given in an organization, I make sure I do it to my level best and beyond people's expectations, because you don't want to leave a bad mark that this woman cannot deliver, because at that point is where now they start even doing either she's a woman. But the moment you deliver and actually exceed their expectations,
then they take you and they say, here is a different situation that you're dealing with. Wow. So what you're saying is, ladies out there who are in this industry, yes, it may be tougher, but if you keep pushing it and make sure that you know, excel at every task you're given. Do what it takes to shine and be the best. And also, how do you see in terms of, you talked about ladies who complaining that, oh, this person is coming to take the credit for the work that I have done, or in terms of just creating visibility for your abilities, if you will. Because, you know, it's one thing to do a task, and it's another thing for people to know that you did it. How do you, you know, help them in those situations to come out of obscurity, as it were, and then be seen?
I think what I have seen, the main problem is we've been sort of made to be to believe that it's okay to just sit down and be humble. I call it a tiara syndrome.
Tiara syndrome.
You wait for somebody to crown you.
I see.
I have come to realize the importance of actually going to get that crown yourself. That way people will know what you are doing. And we are doing so much as women in tech, but no one knows about it. We are not putting our stories out there. I don't know who lied to us that us keeping quiet with our stories is humility.
It's not.
Let people know what you've done. Let people know that you are a very good engineer. You're just not just a graduate, you're a very good engineer. Let people know the good work that you're doing in your organization, even within your organization. I have learned to speak up. Otherwise, if you keep quiet, somebody else is going to take the credit. I have learned to find a way to just say, hey, actually, when I was doing this, this happened.
Yes.
So people will know I am the one who actually
did that.
So I've learned just to go out there and get my crown.
How does one just go out and grab their crown without antagonizing their already maybe not so friendly
I have learned staff not members. To worry if I'm going to piss someone off.
I like that. By the way, don't be timid, just grab it and go. And then deal with whatever comes as it comes.
There's no shortcut.
Amazing. And we talked about these different groups of women in technology, who have these you know, groups, societies that are set up. So we talked about the Akira Chicks, Andela, all these things, and the conferences that they organize. You know, when you say that the uptake of the tickets, you know, in these conferences that are organized by the women, women in technology, is very high and very quick. You know, do you see the same thing in just an IT related conference that's not in any way associated with these different groups?
Unfortunately not. Mm-hmm. And I am talking as someone who has organized events. Mm-hmm. When I was the Google developer group lead in Nairobi, I used to organize a lot of those events. And the most unfortunate thing is that very few women will sign up for this event.
Interesting.
And then you even start issuing special tickets for women. Like, oh, for women, we've put a slot of 50. At some point, they will not even exhaust those 50 tickets you've given them.
Okay, just hang on, Yeah. So you're saying 50 tickets set aside, not exhausted.
Yeah.
For instance, so now one of these other women's organizations, societies, or organize a conference. How many people usually attend those?
Thousands. And tickets will get sold very fast.
Thousands, so a sellout, but
yeah,
even selling 50 in a regular conference is difficult.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That should be a red flag to us.
Absolutely.
How comes when we call for a women in tech conference, we get so much women,
mm-hmm.
so many women going
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we call for an actual conference, very few women are coming out. Is it that we are too comfortable?
Mm.
Is it that we only want to go to a women in tech conferences where we are safe?
Yes.
But where we feel welcome?
Mm.
And once you figure out the problem, because the same problem is now reflecting even in the job industry.
Exactly.
Once you cannot even show up and sit with these men in the same room and talk about machine learning, talk about blockchain with them, then it means there is a problem.
A huge one.
Yeah.
Mm.
Is it that we are not confident in what we are doing?
Yeah.
Which also reflects in the fact that there are very few women in tech stories outside there.
How would you encourage those who are currently working? Because, you know, are there other places that are easily open, calling for women to come and share their stories that you know of that maybe they can?
Yeah, I know, like, TechWiz,
mm-hmm.
One of the writers, Wadera Kikunene,
mm-hmm.
is really focusing on telling stories about women in tech. So if you feel like your story is... I know your story is good.
Mm.
Maybe you just don't feel it's good. But
yeah.
since your story is good, you can just always reach out and tell them, hey, I have a story to share.
Yeah.
And then, of course, what you're actually doing right now
Is
also a great initiative.
Exactly.
And I'm yet to see a local podcast that is focusing on women in tech stories.
Amazing.
Yeah. We are always fixed somewhere
in
the conversation.
Yeah. Or just mentioned, basically, but not the focus on it.
Then lately I've seen a feature on True Love about True Love magazine
mm-hmm.
on women in tech.
Mm-hmm.
So the media industry is starting to pick up women in tech
yeah.
as an interesting feature in their journals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the space is growing. So there's actually a place for people to go now and share.
Yeah.
And now when you're saying story, you know, maybe some people will be intimidated by story. Like, story? I don't think I'm interesting. What do you mean story? You know, when you think of a story, you think thriller, interesting, riveting. What is a story? When you're saying tell your story, what do you mean?
What are your achievements?
Mm-hmm.
What have you done to get to where you are
mm-hmm.
now? That's a story.
That's a story.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people should not be intimidated by the idea of thinking they have to say, then when I was in Kuwait.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just...
You don't have to be in Kuwait to change the world.
It's true.
You can be the village and change the
world. That's so true.
And everybody is unique. Like,
mm-hmm.
everybody's career path, especially in tech, is very, very unique.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that uniqueness is what we need to tell
true.
People.
Yeah. Because like you say, we're all different. We all have maybe even in the same organization, but your experience and mine.
Yeah, are different.
And very different.
Yeah.
So you heard it from her, guys. You know, there are so many spaces where that you can now share your stories, you know, talking in conferences, you know, invite yourself if there's no one calling you. Make sure you go there and just make yourself visible, because by you being seen, you encourage other people to want to be seen and encourage other people to want to take up this field as a career path for themselves as well. Okay, so we've really talked in depth about the length and breadth of this workplace environment. So you as a person, have you ever, you know, somehow thought to say, okay, how about trying to create an environment, the kind of one that I like, the one that you feel is suited to, you know, women in tech? Have you ever thought of perhaps starting your own enterprise?
Yes, I've thought of that, but not now.
Not now? Okay. So I guess we're going to delve deeper into that with Margaret, because she sounds to me like somebody who can actually run and kill her own business. Not kill, like dead, but you understand what I'm trying to say. So I'm really interested in knowing why she's not yet ready to take that leap, and if it's something that she wants to do at all. And if you want to know as well, I suggest that you stay tuned, because we'll be back right after this short break. Hi, welcome back. This is the Afro Women in Tech and Design podcast. And in studio, we have with us Margaret Ondeng, who has been giving us some very amazing stories about her career progression, the current state of the industry and women's role in it, and how guys can also help, you know, increase the visibility of women in technology. And before we left, we were talking about the possibility, maybe, of you starting your own enterprise. And would you like to tell us more about that?
Yeah, definitely at some point I will start my business or an enterprise. But for now, I want to focus more on building my skills,
mm-hmm.
especially now that I've put my feet in the payment industry.
Mm.
I want to be the best in the payment industry.
Okay.
That's where my focus is right now.
Amazing. And so now, you know, before we left also, we had spoken about just this whole idea of visibility and making your story heard and letting people know that you exist and you're here and you're doing great things.
Yeah.
So for instance, for you, how do you get the word out there that I'm here and I'm doing this amazing stuff?
Yes. So personally, I use my social media accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm very vocal on social media.
Okay.
And I'll always speak about what I am doing, my achievements. And I also just pick on topics and just talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also speak at conferences.
Oh, wow. You get invited or you invite yourself?
You invite yourself, you get invited.
Okay.
Yeah. So somebody once said, if they do not give you a seat at the table, you either bring your seat or you go and build another table and call your people. For me, I will... The good thing is, once you speak the first time, you've put yourself out there.
Yeah.
So next time somebody has a conference in Kisumu or Nyeri or Mombasa, even going to Voi, once you've spoken in one event, people have seen that you've spoken. They always call you for the next, for the event. Yeah.
Wow.
And also, networking is very key. Because the moment I know you can talk about design thinking, next time a conference wants a design thinking speaker, I'll... definitely refine.
Yeah, actually, it's true. So even sharing with your peers and other people in your industry.
Yeah.
All right, wow, Margaret, I mean, it's really interesting here how, you know, you are good at one thing, but you still have the desire to develop other skills. So, you know, what other things have you done to continue building your strong set of skills?
So just to mention, I have won a couple of awards.
Amazing.
The first one was IBM Master the Mainframe Championship.
Mm-hmm.
So that was in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
I represented Kenya and Africa in the global championship in
New York. The competition started here?
Yeah, it started here.
With like how many people would you know who roughly joined?
Could be more than 100.
Okay.
Yeah.
And out of the 100, then you were particular application was selected?
Yeah.
Yours alone?
We were two of us. One gentleman and myself.
Out of 100, you made the top two.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So you've done the competition here from 100, you have made it the top two, you've been shipped off to New York, and then what happened in New York?
So in New York, you meet people from all over the world.
Yeah.
People who have PhDs and you're yet to graduate from your undergrad. People who have their masters, like two or three of them.
Yes.
So there you meet people from all sorts of places and stages of their careers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we did the final competition, and out of 50, I was positioned on 29.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Any other achievement that you want to mention?
So in 2016, I got a scholarship by Facebook to attend a conference in Texas. It's called Grace Hopper Celebration of Excelling Women in Computing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was among the 50 young women in computing who were selected by Facebook in the world.
Wow.
Yeah. So what happens in Grace Hopper conference is it's a celebration of excelling women in computing. So you bring all these women who've been complaining, a few. So you take a few
and put them together.
And put them together.
Yeah.
So you meet 5,000 more people
wow.
like you.
Yeah.
Who are in various fields in computing.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was a life-changing moment for me.
How so?
Especially because the lot that we went with under Facebook, various organizations sponsor people to attend their conference.
Okay.
So the lot that we went with under Facebook, I was among the oldest, and I was only 26.
Imagine.
The rest were kids from Yale and Harvard.
What?
Yeah. It's a wake-up call seeing young people doing so much more.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it lights a fire in you.
It lights a fire in you. And then sitting in a room full of 5,000 women.
Yes.
You sort of start questioning why people say we are very few.
We are few. Suddenly you seem so many.
Yeah. Suddenly, all of a sudden you seem so many.
Yeah. So throughout this time we've talked about your, you know, your experience and your career progression through the field of IT. So now here our podcast is one about Afro women in tech and design. So in which way have you seen design playing a part in your industry?
From my point of view, design and technology coexist. Before I get my product out there, I have to think about UI, I have to think about UX. Otherwise, I'll end up taking a product to the market that no one wants to use or no one can use.
Can use.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's interesting. That's really key. And when you're saying UI, UX, just unpack it a little bit for people who might not be.
UI is user interface, which is more of the look and feel of the product. And UX is user experience, like the experience that the customer is going to have with your product. Which is very key when you're coming up with a system requirement.
And you know, so basically when you're going on to send M-Pesa to somebody, what you're experiencing is
user experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And as well as the interface, depending on what you're using. Oh, that's awesome. So who is your role model, just the one you look up to that keeps you striving, even in those moments maybe when you're feeling like, oh boy, can I really continue with this? You know, what do you use to pick you up?
Sylvia Mulingi from Safaricom.
Okay.
Yeah, I really admire that lady. Yeah.
Why?
There's just something unique about her and her leadership and her track record that I feel is what I want, is where I want to be in the next 5 to 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
What does she do at Safaricom so that we can just...
She's the chief customer officer at Safaricom.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so Sylvia Mulingi, here you have a number one fan in Margaret. And it's good to, you know, thank you for being such a great role model so that there is somebody out there that we can all look up to as well. Awesome. So, do you have any sort of nugget of wisdom to drop on this podcast for other people who may be listening? Your parting shot.
Yeah, I'll go with my favorite famous phrase.
Okay.
Get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable. I know who said that. That chick said that.
Yeah, so that has always been my mantra. Put more effort in learning new skills, learning what the industry expects, especially for students coming directly from campus. You have to look at what the job industry expects from you.
Yeah.
And make sure at least you have an idea of what is happening.
Amazing. Yeah. So, you know, parting shot is be prepared. And I don't think you're prepared for what's coming next, my dear Margaret. She thinks that this is the end of the show. It is not. As you guys know, we're going to have a session of just fun questions that we're going to ask her because we've heard so much mind-opening and inspiring stuff. Now we just want to have a little fun, get some laughs out of Margaret. So stay tuned and we'll be back with a few fun questions for our guest. guys, and we are back, and as promised, we are going to have some fun with Margaret. I know we've had fun all along, but now this is like real, just goofy fun. How you doing, Margaret?
I am fine.
Are you ready for this?
Yes, I am.
Are you hanging with Eddie? Cool. You know, we know that you're very serious about your work, your career progression, and getting women in tech, and you've done amazing things so far. Congratulations and thank you. What is it that Margaret does for fun to unwind?
You'll find me in character ziplining all those 6 lines.
No way! Yes. What? How often? Like every weekend, every other month?
Like once a quarter, I must do something that
takes
my blood.
Wow. So you love the thrill?
Yeah, I love the thrill.
Thrill seeker.
Yeah. You know those things that you love doing,
mm-hmm.
but then they're too scary, you don't want to do them again.
And then you find yourself back doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. So based on that, you know, since you enjoy, you know, thrill-seeking adventures, what would be your ultimate then adventure that you would want to do that is on your bucket list?
I want to summit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mount Kenya.
I'm not ready for Mount Kenya, but maybe at the end of the year, maybe.
Okay. So long enough?
Yeah, I want to start long enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So mountain climbing.
Yeah.
And all this part of the things. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. So you're very physically active.
Yeah. We can even do a 10-kilometer competition run right now.
Okay. I take you on that challenge. I'll take you up. Trust me. Believe. She's the one who's going to be breathless after those 10 km. Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
So good sporting and stuff. Awesome. So, as is the tradition here on this podcast, we usually pose a question to our audience, you know, to keep you guys active and interactive. And so, you know, Margaret, you have a question for them.
Yes.
Would you kindly break it down so they can prepare to answer?
So, there's this interesting lady who graduated from University of Nairobi with a first class honors in computer science.
Mm-hmm.
And she also won the Queen's Young Leaders Award in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And also she's the co-founder of a fintech company that uses technology to unlock access to credit for smallholder farmers.
Okay.
So
who is she?
Yes.
And what is her company, maybe?
Yes.
Right?
Who is she and what is her company?
Okay.
Yeah.
So there you go, guys. That is your question for the week. So please, those are clues that we have dropped for you. First class honors, recipient of the Queen's Young Leadership Award in 2016. And she's a co-founder of a fintech company. We want to know who is she and what's the name of the company. Post those answers in the comments below. And with that, we have finally come to the end of our podcast. Margaret, it's been such a pleasure.
Thank you.
And you've really lit a fire under us. And it's been such a great discussion that we've had with you. And with that, guys, we will catch you on the next show.